Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome back in. We are in the third hour, Monday edition, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. The first 2 hours of the show, all about Afghanistan, pretty much exclusively. Encourage you to go download the podcast. You can search out my name, Clay Travis. You can search out Buck Sexton, and you can hear all of that. And certainly we're going to continue to talk about Afghanistan more throughout this hour. But we are together in Nashville right now, and we've got some different guests that are coming in studio with us during the course of the week. And we are pleased to be joined by Matt Walsh from the Daily Wire right now. He is at Matt Walsh Blog on Twitter. He also now lives in Nashville, and you're a father of four and fired up at the absurdity of the mask mandates that are taking place for kids. And we talked about this last week. I went to Williamson County, which is a county south of where Nashville is, on Tuesday. Wednesday, you went and spoke as a parent against the mask mandate in the city of Nashville. What was your experience like? And thanks for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me in. It was a little different from your experience, I think, because there was probably a larger contingent of pro-mask parents. I'd say it was about 50-50.
In Nashville,
yeah. And I could tell that the anti-mask parent, which I don't even like to say anti-mask, more like pro-sanity, pro-reasonable policy.
Yeah.
I mean, I am anti-mask, but there are plenty of these parents who actually have no problem with masks in general. They just don't think their kids should be forced to wear it. So anyway, on the pro-sanity side, I could tell that there was some organization that happened, like an effort to bring parents out. On the pro-mask side, you know, there wasn't as much of that organization. For me, it was kind of revealing because I was like number 20 to speak on the list.
How many people did they allow to speak?
There were 50 people on the list, and then a lot of people didn't show up. And,
yes.
So I don't know, maybe 30 actually spoke.
Right.
We got kicked out before the end because they told us we had to wear masks. They decided like towards the end that if you're in the building, you have to wear a mask or you can leave. And so I said, all right, I'll just leave. But it was sort of revealing to watch all of these pro-mask parents get up there because they were truly terrified. They were shaking and trembling in fear that their children would die if another child without a mask on breathed near them. And I could tell that they really believed that. They had been so taken by media propaganda, they really believed that a child without a mask would murder their child. And that was kind of revealing to me because I wasn't sure how much these parents had really bought into this, or are they more concerned that they would get sick, or do they really think their children's lives hang in the balance? And they do, at least from what I saw.
So are they, based on what you were hearing, and again, I find the parents who are terrified, but it's very sad, but it's also very important to get to the bottom of it, because there are definitely teachers union representatives, folks like that, who are playing politics with the masks in school. Or it's about their worry that adults are going to get sick, right? There's that component. But for people who actually think that it's a big risk to kids, Matt, are they unfamiliar with the actual statistics and numbers? I mean, do they not know? Did that come across that it's something we're getting into the 1 in 100,000 kind of a number of fatalities for children who get this virus? Were they just ignorant of it, or do they not care? I mean, how does that brain process work? The best of your ability, explain it to us.
I think it's a little bit of both. A lot of it is also human nature. I think a lot of people, they don't find data and statistics to be all that compelling emotionally. And what drives most people is anecdotes. So what I heard was a succession of one anecdote after another, people getting up there and saying, oh, I know a child that this happened, or I know someone who knows someone that this happened. And then when it was my turn to speak, I said, okay, well, here are the statistics. You know, 42 million children have contracted COVID that we know of, probably a lot more than that. And the 350 or abouts, according to the CDC, by August had died of COVID. Assuming all that's accurate, that is a mortality rate of like 0.008%. And overall, the overall child population of the country, 0.0004% of them have died by COVID. They're more likely to drown in a bathtub. They're more likely, of course, to die of the flu, which is a really important point here. And you try to lay all that out. I know I'm not the first person to make these points. You made these points many times, Clay, but there is this kind of, it's like you're talking to a brick wall. They don't want to hear it.
They're not masked. And I just said to Clay before you came in, we've gone into true religious symbolism now, meaning that like your belief in the face of contravening evidence actually becomes, in masks, becomes more evidence of your faithfulness to the Fauciite masking religion. And I think that people double down on this even against, I mean, we look at the data on mandate cities versus non-mandate cities or mandate counties, and when you line them up, it's just not possible to look at this and think that they're a successful intervention tool. We had Dr. Marty McCary on the show recently. He's written the Wall Street Journal a bunch of times about COVID stuff, Matt. And he says people forget that masks were the fourth mitigation tool in terms of importance, right? Number one was separating people, right? Or essentially social distancing and keeping the sick away from other people. So when do you think there will be more of a wake up for those who still cling to this? I mean, I just came from New York where I had to get vaccinated to be able to go to my own brother's wedding this week in New York City. Full stop, no exceptions made. When do you think people realize how insane and authoritarian this has really become?
I'm not the guy for silver lining. So if there's a rosy picture at the end of this, if there's light at the end of the tunnel, I'm not the guy to point it out. More of the doom and gloom type, I guess. So I would say that I think we're at the point where if you're still fully invested in the mask cult, then I don't see how you're ever going to be rescued from it. I think there are people that are masking really for the rest of their lives. Part of it is there's this, people aren't aware of the statistics or don't care, but also for a lot of people, their ability to assess risk and to come up with proportional responses to that risk has been utterly obliterated. And so you'll hear them say things like, well, better safe than sorry. There is a risk. It mitigates it.
If we can save even one life.
If we can save even one, which of course, if you try to operate that way, where as long as we could save one life, well, then you would never drive a car. You never leave your house. You would never do anything. Driving a car is a really important point because you get into a car. Every time I put my kids in a car and I drive somewhere.
Yes.
Even with a seatbelt, I know that they might die.
Yes.
I might actually kill them accidentally in the car. I might. I probably won't. Oh, thank God I don't, but I might. You know, you could do that. And yet you choose to do it anyway because you've assessed that although there's a risk and it's a terrible thing that could happen, the risk is not great enough to adjust your lifestyle to that extent.
For putting that into perspective in particular, because I do think, and Buck and I try to do this on our show, and I know you try to do this with your audience too, hammering home facts and data, 1 to 4 year old kids drowning, you are 2.8 in 100,000 people drowned, all right? 0.2 have died of COVID, right? Drowning, vehicle accidents, as you just mentioned, homicide, cancer, cardiovascular disease, the flu, the seasonal flu, suffocation. All of these are wildly in excess in terms of death for kids under 14 years old. And yet we have almost no discussion about it. I was talking with my wife this weekend, and she said we need South Park to do an episode on pools shouldn't be allowed, right? Because far more kids drown than ever are impacted by COVID.
If you want to keep your swimming pool in your backyard, you want kids to drown because you're a bad person, because the logic of the
satirical perspective, right? Yeah. But it's like people don't care about this data, and you tell them. And it comes back to that anecdote where they saw something on social media and it's the driving force.
So they don't reject, they don't accept the data or they don't care about the data, Matt. But also over the weekend, we saw some new numbers now it's Martha's Vineyard, I think, in general, but they had 74 confirmed cases, which this is a highly sophisticated and vaccinated population, as you know, in general in Martha's Vineyard, but specifically the Obama birthday bash. I think the part of this that has been the hardest to swallow for a lot of folks is how much and how blatant the hypocrisy of the controlling elites has been about the COVID lockdowns. Do you think that might be more powerful than the numbers when all said and done? People finally realize that the people telling you to be terrified of COVID aren't themselves actually terrified of COVID in a lot of cases?
Maybe that'll do it. If that was going to do it, then I would hope that it would have already, that would have sunk in for a lot of people, because we've been able to tell that from the very beginning that the people, as you say, who are telling us to be afraid of it aren't afraid of it themselves. That's why I personally, with the Obama's birthday thing, in a way, it's not really hypocrisy, because they've actually been pretty consistent about this the entire time. They've been pretty consistent that, they are important people, and so they get to have different rules and they get to do important people things, and we're not important, so we don't get to do
that. So
this
is like the Lori Lightfoot a haircut thing, remember? It was like, I'm public facing.
Exactly. So they've actually been pretty explicit about that. But either way, I think the lesson we take from that is just to do as they do, because they're not worried about it. They want to have a birthday party and celebrate and, eat, drink, and be merry. So go ahead and do that. Because also the other thing is, COVID is out there. I think we need to start talking about this, that it's out there. It's probably going to be out there forever. It's probably endemic at this point. even the so-called public health experts, to the extent that we trust them, which is not at all, but even they'll tell you that. So it's always going to be there. So you have to figure out a way to live with that reality as this thing that's lurking out there that probably won't do you any harm, but could, you know. And certainly our elites have done that. They realize that it's out there, but they'd rather enjoy their birthday.
We'll bring Matt back here to talk a little more about the Biden administration, maybe even some Afghanistan talk. Want to get his take on it. Matt Walsh of The Daily Wire with us here in studio, and I'm here with Clay in Nashville. So we're having a lot of things to go over today. Customer testimonial coming in from Glenda in California. Relief Factor stops the pain with no adverse side effects, Glenda wrote. I'm delighted to get back to my normal lifestyle. Look, my dad is a avid golfer, but he's also a guy who likes to work with his hands and build stuff. And, you know, Relief Factors really help with his back pain and his arthritis. My mom takes it now, too, because my dad's found so has found it so effective. And Clay, I know Relief Factor has been useful for your household, too.
Yeah, look, my wife is in fantastic shape. She works out really hard, though, and a lot of times you need to be able to bounce back from aging, exercise, everyday living. Goes right to the source of inflammation. Hundreds of thousands of people have ordered Relief Factor, and about 70% of them, they go on to order more. You can join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com. Or call 800-4-RELIEF to get the 1995 3-week quick start developed for you. That's relieffactor.com. Or you can call 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor. Feel the difference.
Welcome back to the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Here in studio with Clay and joined by our guest today, Matt Walsh of The Daily Wire. Matt, one thing over the weekend with all the craziness in Afghanistan that kept coming up, at least in my mind, was how many disasters, how many terrible decisions can the Biden administration get away with before it's clear that this isn't going to be like Jimmy Carter? It's looking like it's going to be worse than Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, I mean, I think with this speech coming up from Biden, I don't know exactly what to expect. I know that there's some people on Twitter are hoping that he resigns, which I tend to doubt. But
that would be a blockbuster of all blockbusters.
But even that, I'm not even sure I would celebrate that because that means we get Kamala Harris. I'm not sure that's a better circumstance. But I think with the Afghanistan thing for me, it's important to draw this line, to walk a line, because on one hand, I think we can all agree that the withdrawal has been handled horribly. That's one thing. It's one of those rare circumstances where everybody agrees on both sides of the aisle. But at the same time, this is something that needed to happen. It's happened in the wrong way, but we did need to leave, I think. And, I also think it's strange, and I'm not an expert myself in Afghanistan, but then we know that the experts have failed us. So we just have to use our common sense and try to navigate these issues, whether it's COVID or this. So I also look at the fact that, you know, Afghanistan allegedly had an army of 300,000 people, Biden claimed. And they, didn't fire a shot and gave up as soon as the American military leaves?
I mean it made the French in World War II look like, diehard fighters.
In the early days, there were some small units that were willing to fight it out. And I think, unfortunately, very bad things were done to them when they surrendered. But as a overall cohesive force, yes, it was just... In fact, they had military units that handed over their gear, and the leadership took payment from the Taliban to not fight right away, right off the bat.
Yeah, I think that if a country has no will to exist, I don't know how long we can prop it into existence. I know that there's this comparison I've seen on social media a lot saying that, hey, we've got bases in like Germany.
Those countries aren't at war still, have active insurgencies still.
We could argue about whether we should have bases there, but they are countries at any rate. We are not propping up this house of cards simply by being there like we are with Afghanistan. And it just seems like there are a lot of people in the ruling class, especially, who say this should be an indefinite situation where we hold this country into existence for unclear reasons, indefinitely, and I don't see how we can do that.
That became the argument that referring to forever war is something that now blows back on the other side. Oh, your forever war is ending. Look what happens. But really, the alternative to this then is just the permanent presence. I mean, that seems to be, there are some people that are still making that case, by the way, which I think is a weak one, but there are people who make it.
Yeah. And this also goes both ways, by the way, because each member of each country has to defend itself and exist for its own sake. But that also is the case for us, because we have plenty of crises here in America to focus on. So even if I were to agree in theory that it's a good idea to go across the world and build nations and so on and be an imperial force, are we equipped right now to do that, even if it was a good idea, which I don't think it is? I would say not.
What about the domestic impact for the international failure big picture, right? I mean, we can talk about the experts have failed again, but does Joe Biden bear a significant consequence domestically for what happened in the foreign country right now in Afghanistan? Or a week from now, has the average American completely forgotten about Afghanistan and everybody just kind of moves on and the long range impact here is not significant? What is the legacy here?
Yeah, I think it's the latter. The average American these days, we have the memory of a housefly, right? And so we've seen this play out so many times where there's this big story the media's talking about. It's a huge scandal, whoever the president happens to be. And we're told that, they're never going to live this down. And then a week later, no one's talking about it. It's like an ancient history.
Yeah.
And that's actually one of the stories about the American people and our culture. That's one of the most important stories is our inability to focus on one thing and care about it for more than 7 days. Or even 7 hours many times.
Yeah, and social media has exacerbated what was already that trajectory, right? To the point where everybody has the memory of a goldfish.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's always a million things going on in the world. And sometimes it's a matter of, well, which thing should I focus on? And then a lot of people outsource that discernment to the media. And the media tells us, oh, well, here's what you should focus on now. Old news. Now focus on this instead.
Isn't it amazing, Matt, to watch as they pretend now that it is at least the withdrawal is utter catastrophe. Everybody can see it. It couldn't be more obvious. Now they're asking the tough questions for a day or two of the Biden administration as if that's something to be celebrated or brave. It would have been better if they had asked questions, I think, before the whole thing fell apart.
Yeah, I saw the interview with Jake Tapper where
his whole thing. He asked the hard questions when there's no other choice. Yeah. Then he wants a pat on the back. He's the biggest of the frauds, in my opinion. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I also think it's interesting that this is the one thing, although it was handled terribly again, but leaving Afghanistan is the one thing that the media decides to hold Joe Biden to account for. I find that interesting as well.
Quickly, what's the Ravens record going to be this year? I know you're for people out there who are NFL fans, you're a big Baltimore Raven fan.
I'm going to go 13-3.
You got 17 now, remember? So 13-4, think you're going to win the AFC North?
14-3, yeah. I'll go 14-3. That's based on nothing but the fact that I'm a homer.
That's bold talk. Bold talk.
I mean, They've been good. It's going to be interesting to see.
Undefeated in the preseason. Come on, that's got to count for something.
What is
it, like 25
games in a row or whatever the heck it is? Unheard of. He is Matt Walsh. Encourage you to go follow him at Matt Walsh Blog. And I got to tell you, it's been nearly 20 years since 9/11, and there's a 500-mile journey through six states, 42 days to honor the 9/11 fallen is underway. Frank Siller tunneled the towers. He laid a wreath at the Pentagon, started walking toward Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Along the way, joined by 9/11 families, veterans, first responders, and the program's recipients there, parades planned. And then on the morning of 9/11, Frank is going to retrace his baby brother Steven's footsteps 20 years later, walking from the tunnel into downtown Manhattan to where the towers stood. You can help America keep its promise to never forget. Honor heroes by donating $11 a month at T2T.org. That's $11 a month at T2T.org. Monday edition, lots of discussion, obviously, about Afghanistan. I encourage you to go download the podcast. You can search out my name, Clay Travis. You can search out Buck Sexton. Make sure you don't miss a minute of the program. Our thanks to Matt Walsh at Matt Walsh Blog, who was just fantastic in studio, giving you an idea, by the way, of what is coming down Tuesday. We will have the governor of Tennessee on, Bill Lee. He will join us in the second hour, and then in the third hour, Tommy Lahren of Fox News will be in studio with us, also Fox Nation, so you can set your calendars accordingly and be aware of both of those guests coming up on Tuesday as we're doing the show together here in Nashville. But I want to circle back around now, ironically enough, Jen Psaki will circle back on this whenever she ends her vacation, but Secretary of State Tony Blinken, one of the big questions that is out there is, will we end up with Afghanistan as a breeding ground for terrorism again? He was asked, the Secretary of State was, about that play cut seven.
Jake, we have tremendously more capacity than we had before 9/11 when it comes to counterterrorism. In places around the world where we don't have forces on the ground, in Yemen, in parts of Africa, in parts of Syria, we're able to deal with any potential terrorist threat to our country. And we're doing that every single day. We're going to retain in the region the over-the-horizon capacity, as we call it, to see and deal with any reemergence of a terrorist threat. And look, I can't tell you what the Taliban is going to do. But again, in their self-interest, allowing a repeat of what happened before 9/11, which is a terrorist group to reemerge in Afghanistan that has designs on the United States, well, they know what happened last time. So I don't think it's in their self-interest to allow that to happen again.
Okay, Blinken, Buck, has been pretty much the only Biden administration official who has been talking at all for the past several days. Now, again, in about an hour, Joe Biden is scheduled to speak from the White House about the situation on the ground in Afghanistan. You just got, Buck, talking points from Nancy Pelosi's crew. But you know, I would say, almost as much it feels like as Tony Blinken does about Afghanistan. And I think for people out there who may not care as much about foreign entanglements, should we be worried now that we're completely out of Afghanistan that we are going to create another breeding ground for the next iteration, however it might arise to become a reality of a 9/11 type attack?
Well, this is the center of the debate right now for what comes next, because the humanitarian catastrophe that's unfolding right now. There will be executions. There will be women who are effectively enslaved. There will be abuse of children on a horrific scale. That's happening, unfortunately. That's going to happen with the Taliban. It already is happening. So then what do we have to think about from a U.S. policy perspective going forward? And that's where you get into will it become a jihadist safe haven? That would be the term, or a platform for the global jihad. And I've got to say that the over-the-horizon capabilities, and by that they tend to mean manned and unmanned flight, so using drones and using strike aircraft and bombers when necessary to go in and attack targets. It's very hard to think that, given what we've just seen here, Clay, that our intelligence capabilities, our intelligence gathering and knowledge and on-the-ground assistance in a place like Afghanistan is going to be sufficient for us to use those over-the-horizon capabilities to strike at whatever it is that we think is a threat, right? I mean, we're now losing so much visibility into Afghanistan as we're drawing down that we're going to be able to see things coming and deal with them effectively, again, using those long-range strike capabilities. I think that's rosy, a rosy thinking scenario here. I think that we're going to see the Afghan Taliban. They'll probably consolidate for a while. They will spend time proving their governance model. Believe it or not, that's what they're, one of the reasons they were particularly successful in the Pashtun areas of the country in the south, and places like Kandahar and Helmand. And one of the reasons they're so successful is that they were creating shadow governance for a long time. And they do come in and their orders are respected on the ground, meaning the Taliban leadership's orders will be respected on the ground. So they're going to try to become a country. They're going to try to become a regime that actually has the Chinese, the Russians, and others recognizing them. And then the question will be, well, is this just a place that's a place where terrorists can gather, or will there be a true alliance of some kind? I don't know if there'll ever be the true alliance there was with Al-Qaeda that we saw in the past. It was pretty open that they were the homeland for Al-Qaeda in the past. But there could be something along those lines. I mean, there could be essentially safe space for the operation of certain terrorist groups. I mean, this is also, if you're looking for a region of the world, you have dozens of terrorist groups operating in the AFPAC region. And we should also start to think of Afghanistan as essentially an extension of Northwest Pakistan. And then it makes a lot more sense. So I know that the administration is going to say, don't worry, we've got this. But Clay, to put it really simply, given what we've just seen, how can anyone listen to Tony Blinken and say, you know what? I think they've got a handle on the situation.
And this is where I think this foreign policy calamity rolls into the domestic disaster, which is building on what you're saying, Buck. based on what you are seeing on your televisions and have seen of the Taliban rise up and take over Afghanistan faster than any of the, and I'm doing this in quotation marks, experts told us was possible. How is it that you can trust in any way the experts on COVID? How is it that you can trust the experts on inflation? How is it that you can trust the experts on the border? How is it that you can trust the experts on crime? All of these areas Joe Biden is already failing in. To me, this further undercuts the idea of expertise in his administration across the board. If they can be this wrong about Afghanistan, how can they? And we know how wrong they've been about COVID already, but I think all that builds on each other.
Well, this is one of the points of genius of Trump, actually, which is that he was willing to call out the credentialed elites as phonies and frauds who make bad choices and other people suffer the consequences and there's no accountability for them because they belong to this system of the elites. It's one of the things that was really most appealing.
Like, it's easier to say, hey, there's a way to succeed in Afghanistan because that keeps you in good stead in the military than to say, hey guys, we're screwed here. We got to watch out. Like, let's get out of here.
There was a script. If you were either a senior diplomat, intel official, military, there were things you had to say about Afghanistan so that when you'd be invited to think tank meetings, when you'd have a profile written about you in the Washington Post, you were considered one of the good, smart people. And if you broke with that consensus, then you risked personally your career, your aspirations. Now,
this is something, by the way, that happens to both of us, right? Because we're breaking a lot of times with conventional wisdom in the way that we talk about COVID, or we're trying to be as honest as we can with our audience. You're not part of groupthink, right?
Oh, yeah.
And groupthink has its rewards. You're a good guy. You're a part of the crew, but you're not necessarily telling the truth.
Well, neither you nor I will ever be invited on the Stephen Colbert show, for example, yes. You know, late at night. Whereas there'll be people who are boring and useless and worthless from, say, CNN who will,
yes.
Because they're part of, again, that elite apparatus. And speaking of that, you know, I didn't mean to skip past this because Nancy Pelosi's office has released the White House talking points on Afghanistan. And it's basically this is the White House talking points on Afghanistan. The president was not willing to enter a third decade of conflict and surge thousands more troops. It's clear from the past few weeks that would have been necessary, more troops for an indefinite amount of time. The administration knew there was a possibility Kabul would fall to the Taliban. It was not an inevitability. It was a possibility. The administration planned for every possibility. We had contingency plans in place, but indefinite war was unacceptable to the president. So, exactly what you would expect here, which is that they're just pretending like this is not a complete and utter disaster and a catastrophe and a huge black eye for the Biden administration. They're saying, oh, no, don't worry. This is pretty much exactly within the plan. You know, that's why we're sending thousands more troops. The whole thing. They pulled all the troops out so they could send 6,000 in to block the exit to get everybody back out. I mean, this is what we're actually facing and dealing with right now. We've got some more vets on the lines. We'll try to take some calls. We come back with them in a few minutes to close out and also talk to you about how we've got a stack show tomorrow, more about the domestic policy front, COVID, the budget, authoritarianism running amok, Fauci getting ready for the third round of booster shots. Texas State Supreme Court blocked mask, or I think it supported the continuation of mask mandate. I'm sorry, of no mask mandates, right? So basically the Texas court said you're not allowed to mandate masks in contravention of the statewide mask mandate ban.
You sound like a law professor with that analysis. Basically, the governor of Texas has the right to let parents make their choice, and Dallas and Houston can't come in and take away that right.
There we go. And so we'll come into more of that tomorrow. Obviously, we've also got Tommy Lahren joining us the third hour. It'll be a lot of fun to talk to.
And the governor of Tennessee.
And the governor of Tennessee. Let's get into that in just a moment. But, you know, the work that I do to prepare for this time together has me constantly researching. And I see headlines and stories on soaring debt and massive inflation that no one in the administration wants to acknowledge. At the same time, the stock market's reaching all-time highs. But how long is that going to last before the bubble bursts? You want to protect what you've built. So how do we, the people, protect our money, our retirement, and our savings? The answer is simple. We rely on the old faithful. People are buying real gold and silver from the Oxford Gold Group. It's gold you can actually hold in your hands or put in your IRA. And I'll tell you, there's nothing like actually holding gold that you've bought in the palm of your hand. Call the Oxford Gold Group right now at 833-404-GOLD. Oxford Gold will send you a free guide on investing and answer all your questions. Protect your money before things get even worse and call the Oxford Gold Group today, 833-404-GOLD, 833-404-G-O-L-D.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show, finishing off the Monday edition of the program. We want to get to some of your calls, a lot of vets rolling in, and we appreciate all of you giving feedback on your reactions as you see Afghanistan descending into complete chaos. And let's start with Michael in Abilene, Texas. Michael, what you got for us?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Excellent.
Yeah, I just want all the other veterans out there to know we didn't abandon Afghanistan. We were just following our orders. We did what we could do. And, you know, all we can do right now is just pray for that country to hopefully get a taste of freedom again and basically just to continue to live ours. I mean, this is probably the hardest thing yet. I mean, every time we try to accomplish something, it's just a stab in the back. You know, I just my heart's for our brothers and sisters and for the country of Afghanistan.
Thank you for your service, Michael. Bill in San Antonio is also a veteran. He's been waiting for a while. Bill, what you got for us?
So I can just get a couple statements here I wanted to make real quick and just get your thoughts on it. I don't think that holding public office makes someone immune from hating our country. I referenced mainly the squad, Rashid Tlaib, Sandy Cortez, Ilhan Omar. Now that the Taliban has taken over, they have in their possession our Stan Eagle drones that we left behind. There are some howitzers which may have been left with some AI-guided rounds. And on July 28th, a co-founder of the Taliban met with the Chinese foreign minister. So if they are establishing ties with China, could this not be some sort of a backdoor arms trade with China to give them our technology that we have?
Well, China, Bill, thank you, by the way. China is going to view Afghanistan the way it does every other country it interacts with, which is just from a purely what benefits us. We don't care about anything else, human rights or, you know, the international community perspective. And so they're going to want resources in Afghanistan and they're going to view this as an opportunity to push their influence in the region. But there's a lot of players. I mean, it's not just China that are going to have a very strong hand in, well, dealing with the Taliban going forward. Pakistan is certainly top of the list. The Iranians tend to, because the Iranians are Shia, of course, tend to not like the Sunni Muslim Pakistani, I'm sorry, Afghani Taliban or the Pakistani Taliban. But there's going to be a whole bunch of countries jockeying for influence, but certainly China is going to be a major player in that process as well. Thank you, Bill, for calling in. And, we also have, let's see, Charlie in Kansas City, Missouri. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
We're good. Thank you. What's on your mind?
Hey, I'm a big military family. I'm retired military, 32 years. We have family of six, five are serving. My brother-in-law, you know, retired SF. I'm retired, you know, with in the line of the infantry line of work. But I tell you what, I've done multiple trips overseas. My son just got deployed with 82nd. Due to this mess that's going on right now, and he's an infantry officer. You know, bottom line, you know, we need to, totally get out of there, let these kids take care of themselves, you know, or if we go back in, the problems I've seen in the different places I've been, we have not had enough resources, and we have not had enough men to do the job that's out there in a timely fashion. And, you know, our current president is a complete moron, you know, for pulling everybody out of there. You know, if we gonna go back in, let's go in there and spank these kids, you know, the Taliban, I mean, and do what we got to do and get the job done and over with. If not, totally pull out of there. And you know, sometimes, you know, like with our own children, you know, I mean, they have to grow up. You push them out of the nest, you know, for them to take care of themselves, you know. And I don't want these people, you know, thousands and thousands getting on a plane and coming back to our country, because what's going to end up happening is that you're going to have some of the Taliban mixed in with the quote-unquote good people coming in. So you're going to have these wolves mixed in with sheep, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no doubt. And thank you, by the way, Buck. We've had so many different veterans who have been weighing in. We wanted to get as many different of your calls as we could. And we want to thank everybody out there for their service and let you know that, unlike a lot of people in the media, we're not just going to abandon this story in like 2 days, right? Like, this is a major threat going forward. And Buck, and you probably don't need to hear it from me, but of all the people who are talking on the radio today about Afghanistan, you have direct personal experience in Afghanistan, candidly, in a way that very few do, which is why I think it's important to let you have the final closing thoughts here.
Well, I appreciate that, Clay. And yeah, my time on the CIA's Afghanistan desk was certainly eye-opening. And what we're seeing right now, in essence, now looking at it from the perspective of somebody who was reading the reports and getting a sense from the generals on down of what was really happening in the country, and speaking to different, you know, SF units and guys who were out there on the front lines about what they were seeing, this notion of building an Afghanistan that was going to be able to stand on its own ever was just, looks like a fiction now. I mean, and it should have been clear to the American people a long time ago that that's what our leadership was pushing us into. But we'll, as you said, we'll continue to follow this story in the days ahead. It's going to be, it has massive implications, not just for the international community, but of course for the U.S., its view of itself in the world and domestic politics too. Tomorrow we got the governor of Tennessee. We got Tommy Larum. We got domestic politics, COVID lockdowns, and all that stuff to talk about. So stick around with Clay and Buck.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.